Okay, so again, Tim here from Kuan Yin Healing, and we're on week three of the reconnective journey, the emotional plane. So you spent a week on the threshold and looking at the physical world, and as I as is predictable and judging from the Facebook wall, a fair amount of stuff came up for folks, even as we were just looking at the physical. A lot of emotional things, a lot of thoughts, and that's kind of the point. There's the, how all of this works together, and the benefit of that stuff coming up is that you know, before we can do anything else, we need to understand what it is we're dealing with, and it's only after we're aware of it can we start to transform it, and only after we have the ability to transform can we start looking at intention. And balancing that with intuition and awareness. So today, that's what we're looking at. So that this stuff comes up, first of all, why it comes up and why that's good, although it may not seem that way at the time, more about this next week, and what to do about that. So before we get into all that, I'd like to hear about your experiences, and and let's start right there. So, who's feeling brave? We can start small. We talked about what are a couple of physical things that we might be able to do, and there is certainly a long, long list of them, as well as some of the other homework, some of the what we see as outside problems, people, situations, and so forth. And once again, understanding those and getting them down in front of us helps us with awareness, and we can't change any of that until we're aware of that. And even just the physical things, the, you know, small things, physical changes, this alone will change things. I've experienced this once again this week, just myself. I, you know, telling you guys all these things, puts it right in front of my face as well. So I picked a couple things to work on, and three long-standing problems that for 6 months around here got fixed in 2 days. They had nothing to do with what I was doing. You know, when we start making physical changes, things happen. And it's not always clear why, but sometimes it's just like, if you remember way back in week one, I talked about it's like having a car that maybe you've really worked on, but it's only like 95% functional. So this is, you know, sometimes it's just like there's a little electrical short or something, and once that's working, bing, everything works again. So let me hear from you before we dive into all this. What are the physical things that you're working on, and what are some of the things, if you're comfortable sharing it with, that you've seen as outside problems? So this understandably is for folks may hit to emotional, flashpoint. So let's all create a lot of love for everybody, which is happening on the Facebook page, and that's wonderful. And we invite people to share. So there's Mike is yours. Who'd like to start us off? Who will start us off anyway? Let's start small. What are the physical things that you decided to work on? Just anybody share what those are? What are folks working on?
Well, this is Nicole, and since I waited till almost last week, I felt like I was really successful at spending more time out in nature. I definitely had a couple longer periods of exercise. Some of that was just coincidence, but just really was mindful and recognized of what a shift that does happen. when you work hard physically. In general, over the week, it was really wonderful to see on the Facebook page that people were feeling angry and that there was a lot of that going around, because I was definitely feeling that way too. And I posted this on the page to Selena, but she posted something about expectations being premeditated resentment, and that just so hit home for me. And when I read that, it just really caused a major shift, because then I could so specifically identify some of the things that I was really angry about, and how that whole process had happened, where I had these resentments. And once I was able to identify it, then it was a lot easier to let go of.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I
expectation.
Felt really successful there.
Yeah. It's interesting. I usually say it as expectations are resentments under constructions. And as soon as we start to scratch the surface, it's pretty common actually, that anger is the first emotion, followed by sadness. Because that's our first defense. There's a strong case to be made, in fact, for that all anger is actually sadness. So thanks for sharing. Okay, next brave soul. Any brave soul at all? I know everybody's name. Anybody? Don't make me do my Ferris Bueller imitation. You're not going to leave Nicole out there by herself, are you?
Well, I'll talk. I don't even know what to say, because it's been just a really wild week. And last week, and let's see, I made myself get out and go do things with friends, so that was good. And, you know, because I'm in such a huge group of people all the time with the work that I do, and they're so loud. And so sometimes I just want quiet, because it's just better that way than to be having people that are so loud and all of that. So anyway, other than that, let me see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, other than the big storm and the mess that we have here, you know, everything is really okay. My boss was being nice, because her daughter had a baby, so I guess she's in a good mood. But we don't know how long that'll last. It's probably not very long. So really, that's about it. Everything else is good. Oh, other than, listen to this. So I got in from the Internal Revenue Service, so I have to go back to 2010. That took me forever to find it. And take it to my accountant so she can fill it out and send it in. And then the bathtub has a leak, and so I'm going to have that fixed. So that kind of made me a little down, but I'm over it now.
Okay.
But it's still not fixed, but I'm over it.
Okay.
So that's it for me.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
So do people have trouble with the homework? Is it in process? Is it, where are we at on that?
Well, this is Sandy. And for me,
Sandy.
It's all stuff that I can't do anything about right at this point. But it's all stuff that irritates me, bugs me, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I've done it, and it's all on paper in front of me, but I don't have any you know, it's out of my control at this point as far as being able to change any of it.
Right.
So it's there. And,
okay.
You know, that's kind of about it. It, you know, it is what it is, kind of. That's kind of where I'm at. Not,
right.
You know, I can't do anything about it, so I'm not going to let it necessarily, you know, I don't know. I mean, bother me, because I can't do anything about it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And in fact, this was the point here, to just get it down, not to do anything about it. So,
okay.
You know, first we get a good look at what we're dealing with, in particular. So, good work. Okay, any other sharers? Going once.
This is Janine.
Janine?
I'm actually driving, so I apologize. But I do want to check in, and this week seemed like it took forever. I've been so looking forward to this call because I'm just ready for last week to be over. The homework was kind of heavy. I think it's still in process for me, and I'm just noticing where it comes up, where I blame. I did get to write some of it down. And then going back and just the foundation of gratitude, like my spiritual touchstone, I notice when I don't do my walks that I committed to doing, like it affects my next day. It's really kind of odd to me. And
yeah.
I want to do them because I feel better. So I think that's where I'm at. But I'm excited to move forth because this week has been really long.
Thank you for sharing all that. This isn't a process that's going to happen quickly. But the key thing is that we jump into it and that we get that in process. So thank you very much. And also, it's interesting that we don't usually look at this carefully, but once we start to look at what we're doing, you know, and physically we start to realize what a difference it makes. And I have found that myself. I'll start to wonder a few times, you know, geez, why isn't everything going well? And then I realize that I've stopped doing something, a walk, exercising, you know, breakfast, whatever it is. So great feedback. Okay. Anyone else at all?
Sandy, this is Nicole, and I'm with you because Heather and I were having this conversation on Saturday about, like, okay, we're ready to get to the next step. Like, having to sit with some of the icky stuff sometimes.
Yeah.
And be okay with that. And also, I know for me that sometimes when I don't meditate or I don't get my exercise in the morning, like, I immediately am able to, like, blame somebody else, which, you know, in the end, if I can't, but, like, because I could find the time. I could get up a little earlier, or I could, you know, meditate in the bathroom or something. But really trying to stay sort of calm through that, because, of course, I'm becoming hyper-aware of all of my actions and what they're putting out, and I'm realizing how often, you know, this idea of sort of operating from my highest self or from the person that I'd like to be, how often I really depart from that. And so it's like sort of this funny conundrum to be wanting to meditate, to be calm and centered, and then the second somebody throws off my schedule, to feel kind of pissed.
Right.
And not want it to come to that either, because I'm becoming aware enough to say, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I have done that in the last 2 weeks, too, just been more aware of my thoughts and whatnot, and especially the negative ones, and it's like, oh, my God, you know, I didn't realize how negative I really am, you know, it's like, oh, you know, I thought I was doing really good, and then it was like all these, you know, crazy negative things, and it's like, oh, my goodness, and judgments and stuff, and it's like, ah, so
right.
Just
yeah.
The awareness, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point at first, is just getting that awareness. Because like you say, it's we honestly just don't know.
Right.
So, beautiful. So, very cool. Okay. Any other shares? Before we dive into the next chapter? It's funny what you say about the Facebook page. I noticed that myself. First I was like, oh my goodness, all hell is breaking loose, and then suddenly there was this huge calm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said, well, I guess that's good. All right. Okay, well then if we're pretty good, I guess I will hit the mute and dive in here. Okay, all right then. So emotions, the astral plane. We're going from on the threshold to actually crossing the threshold. And a couple things about this. So first of all, a couple words about the astral plane. Often when people, if you've done any kind of reading on New Age topics or if you heard people talk about things, it's not uncommon to come across some pretty wild stuff about the astral plane and warnings and cautions and things of this nature. And what I want to say about that is to not take any of that too seriously. It's not that it's not accurate. It's just that a lot of those kinds of writings and traditions go back thousands and thousands of years when people were just learning, to transcend, the physical and to better things. And now imagine kind of kicking around in a plane where there's nothing but raw emotion with no understanding or control of it, where things manifest very, very quickly. Because if you look at the chart we looked at in week one on the levels of being, you notice that the things that we usually think of as spirit aren't even halfway through plane one. So when you get to the astral plane, to the emotional plane, things move very, very quickly. And imagine completely raw emotions with no control and nothing to kind of balance them out. It would indeed be a very scary place. But the reality is that we do have control. We do have other emotions, and we do have higher thoughts and planes. And so I would, let go of those fears, keep them in context. We don't have anything of that nature to worry about by exploring the astral plane the way that we're doing it. Okay? It is, however, much, much faster. And this is the key to going from on the threshold to crossing the threshold. It is a zone of magnified power. Okay? We wanted things to change. Well, this is where things start to change. Some in the physical plane already, but especially in this plane. And so let's start looking at how we work this together. The first point I want to make about emotions is that joy is our natural state. We really sometimes have trouble with that. It's a cultural thing. I've mentioned a couple times before, you look at some, quote, primitive, unquote, societies, and they're happier. They don't work as hard. They don't face some of the same things, problems that we do. It is a natural state. Stephen Wilder, I think, wrote in one of his books, I don't remember which one, consider the tiger. Tigers don't get up in the morning and go, oh man, what is it, Monday? It's like, there's nothing for breakfast. I'm going to have to get up. And every time I've got to like run down food, and it always runs away. Man, being a tiger just sucks, man. No, tigers don't think like that. Most things in nature don't think like that. We're kind of the exception here. And we change that natural state. So before we get into dealing with all these things, that's one key thing to remember. that it's not, joy isn't some place that's difficult for us to get to and maybe one day we could attain it. It's our natural state, okay? It's we ourselves who change it away from joy. So one of the ways, a very easy way, well, in theory easy, to deal with this is simply that, that one way out of hell is to stop creating it and to become aware that we do in fact create it. And once we do create it, we love to cling to it, you know. That we have several sayings. You probably have heard some of these. One of my favorites is, if you're being dragged, like, let go of the rope. And it's the only thing that's keeping you dragging. It's hard to do because our egos get involved. And all of a sudden, you've got all this drama going. And this is a good way to think of the emotional plane, the astral plane, good, bad, and different. It's our drama. And we're going to talk about drama, in fact, in a little bit. But just that first basic understanding that one way out of hell is to stop creating it. And if you're being dragged, let go. I have a friend who says, if you're going through hell, for God's sakes, don't slow down. You know, and we tend to do that. We tend to slow down and wallow in it and look at that. Again, I understand it's a difficult thing to do. I'm as guilty as anyone. So, a place to think of first. One of the things that kind of helps me deal with this, if I find myself in that state, as I remember this really humorous comic, I think everybody's probably heard, humorous to me, I have a bizarre sense of humor. everybody's probably heard the footsteps in the sand story, right, where there's two sets of footsteps in the sand, and then there's just one set, and the guy says, well, you know, what's happening? How come you left me? You know, God, when I was walking through these hard parts, and the story goes that God said, well, those are where there's a single set of footprints, that's where I carried you. And somebody did a comic of this, and then in the next panel, God says, that long fur over there, that's where I dragged you for a while. So I don't know, a bizarre sense of humor, but it reminds me to keep a sense of humor about things, and I stop taking myself so seriously. So if joy is our natural state and we're just getting in our way, why do we do that? There actually is a positive purpose to this, and this is really the beginning of understanding initiation, and we're going to start talking about that process today. So let me stop really briefly just for questions before I get into this. And anybody have thoughts so far? The thunderstorm outside is rolling in.
Yeah. Why don't we just let go when we're being dragged? I thought that was funny, by the way, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Or just trust that, you know, that's part of our process. Anyway, I appreciated that, so thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. All right, let's jump into this then. All right. So I want to, this is not a new issue for humankind. And it goes back to the very beginning of Western civilization, of thought in Western civilization, and probably others. I just am more familiar with ours. And going all the way back to Greek theater. Now, Greek theater is dedicated to the god Dionysus. Dionysus is a satyr. He's half man and half goat. And this is important. It's not simply some random myth, because it reflects our nature as half rational and half passionate. And it's important that we are that nature. You know, I don't think any one of us would want to be, you know, Spock, you know, all logic and no passion. And we also wouldn't want to be entirely passion with no reason whatsoever, that we have this dual nature. And Greek theater is divided into two main types, comedy and tragedy. And these have nothing to do with happy and sad. It's a different way of carrying a message. The word comedy means loosely a home song, a song about all of us together, the human condition. OK, okay? And when you look at a Greek comedy, or in fact, any comedy since then, you will see things that address the common problems in human nature. So not things that are typical of that person or that person or that person, but think problems that we all share. So, you know, a good example is in movies, romantic comedies, right? It's easy to say, well, they all have the same plot. Well, in a sense, they do, because we all face those same issues. Okay? It's not something that is different and unique for one person and then, a complete change for someone else. But in the sense of initiation, comedy is about the inexhaustible joy of life, invincible. The inexhaustible joy of life, invincible. Why? They always end happily, okay? But how do they end happily? We don't solve these problems. They end happily because someone or something, or in the Greek tragedy, it's one of the gods, comes in and solves it for us, okay? There's some piece of information that comes that sets it up. Somebody else opens the door for us. We're not capable of getting out of that situation by ourselves. We need outside help. But that outside help always comes. Okay? After a while, anyway. Now, tragedy. Tragedy in Greek is literally goat song, a song for the satyr Dionysus. And in terms of initiation, tragedy is about shattering forms and attachment. Shattering forms and attachment. One of the things that happens when we leave the comfort zone and cross the threshold is that those old forms and those attachments are not simply left behind, they're gone. And the reason they're gone is because they never existed in the first place, but we didn't know that. Now, a tragedy has a really, really interesting form that centers around not everybody, but around a tragic hero. A tragic hero is somebody who is, in the Greek sense here I'm talking about, somebody who is noble and good, but not perfect. Okay? In many ways, a superior human being, somebody who may be beyond us. And they're superior largely because they go on this journey that most of us never take. Now, the reason the tragic hero is not perfect is the tragic hero has a tragic flaw. Okay, and something to which the hero is usually blind. And so in probably the best example of this ever is Oedipus Rex, where Oedipus is a truly great king, a truly smart king, has done wonderful, wonderful things for the people of Thebes, but he's arrogant. And when people question him, he reacts defensively and violently. And his arrogance extends, you know, from his kingdom to the gods. You don't challenge Oedipus. He knows everything. This is his problem. He's brilliant, but he knows it. And it's his arrogance that's his downfall. But he's blind to this. Okay? Now, the hero, the tragic hero, faces a dilemma. Okay? So the situation is not fair. There is no way for the hero to win. Both choices are terrible. It's not going to end well, period. No chance. But in the process of addressing that dilemma and making those choices and going through this tragedy, something is gained. Okay? The hero acquires new knowledge that can be shared with us generally, with humanity generally. And this happens when the hero is humbled. In Oedipus's case, you know, he's blinded. In fact, well, he blinds himself. But he has learned. And this is what tragedies are about. Okay? All these things that the hero goes through. Okay? You would think at the end the hero would be very, very bitter. You know, it was never a fair deal. But no, the hero accepts his fate graciously. All right. Why? Well, for one thing, this is a superior human being by definition. But the reason hero accepts his fate graciously, is that something really valuable comes of this. At a very high cost, perhaps, but in the case of a tragedy, but something very valuable. In particular, in terms of initiation now, what happens here is that this hero has to face his or her own demons. So in the case of, you know, of Oedipus's story, why did it have to happen this way? And if you go through the play carefully, it didn't have to happen that way. It's largely Oedipus making decisions. The word panic comes from the god Pan, right? Pan is a satyr, half man, half goat. Okay, panic. These demons, okay, are twofold. At once, you know, the demons, yes, the demons are danger. But demons also bestow magical power. Okay? There is real power in these demons. And this is the mystery, the real mystery of tragedy and initiation. Aristotle talked about tragedy as one of the most important parts of it being catharsis, this release of emotions. But not a catharsis in the way of, you know, I had a good cry and now I feel better, but really losing this attachment, releasing, of taking something that was inside and letting it go. Okay? A very different meaning of that. So the big mystery of these demons, the big mystery of initiation, is that these demons come from ourselves. These demons come from ourselves. So as soon as we cross the threshold, we enter what Campbell calls the road of trials. Now, that doesn't sound so appealing, but the road of trials is a journey of discovery. And as we cross the threshold, Campbell describes this as the belly of the whale. In other words, the hero goes inside himself or herself, goes inside to be born again. Okay? That's the purpose. Self-annihilation, that sounds pretty scary. But the purpose of this self-annihilation is not destructive, but to be born again, to be creative. Okay? The negative context of this are the ego resisting this. It's a journey of discovery. And at the end of the discovery lies things of real value. Of real value. So this is another place to pause for a second for questions. How's that landing for folks so far? Everybody clear?
I'm panicked, just you talking about it.
Well, I'm glad that you said that, because the very next step is meeting the goddess, which is a very good thing. So let me jump into that then. So when we meet the goddess, the first thing that happens on the road of trials is that even though our demons come from ourselves, we are not alone. Okay, we have allies. And, you know, we think of this in terms of myth, and again, I encourage people not to dismiss myth as mere stories, but to understand that these are stories we tell over and over and over and over again in the same form because they ring so true for us. They reflect us. We don't go on these journeys alone. Okay? The first thing the hero does, even if the hero is initially some sort of a loner, is hooks up with some buddies. It's get some help. Maybe they're already friends, maybe they aren't, but the hero does not go on this journey alone in initiation. And none of us should or need to do that as well. One of the purposes of gratitude are to allow us to accept this grace. Instead of saying, no, I really kind of got this, I got my own way, is to say, wow, thank you. Okay, yes, I'm willing to accept this help. I'm grateful. So there's a little bit of humility that comes with this. But that's the first thing, is to recognize that we do have help. Okay? And this is the role of gratitude. This process of fighting these demons, then, it's not so much that it should be something that's scary as it is of understanding the purpose is that we're discovering our opposite, our own unsuspected selves, and assimilating it. So instead of being half people, okay, we actually are absorbing all of ourselves, okay, that journey of self-discovery. Just the simple things we've done so far, we found that we've learned a lot about ourselves and starting to become whole selves. What's sometimes the scary part is that everything is fluid and ambiguous and moving, but that's what we want. Remember that we can't change things. We can't grow until we can change and be fluid. And the only thing that's scared, the only thing that has a reason to be scared, is the ego itself. Okay? So, the meeting with the goddess then. Nature is good. It's and bountiful. And to go into this not alone, that's ego, but to go in this with the understanding that we do have help and balance and to make good use of that. Okay. The next thing we run into, the problems that we run into next, after the first thrills of getting underway, is that yes, as you are correctly identified already, the adventure develops into a journey of darkness and fear. But this is again is coming from inside us. Okay, Campbell calls this the womanist temptress section, meaning that we spurn the flesh that we've come from. So, who are the ogres that are attacking the hero? They are reflections of the unsolved enigmas of his own humanity, as Campbell puts it. Reflections of the unsolved enigmas of his own humanity. Okay? So let me just give you an example of how this works. When I did last week's homework the first time, okay, one of the things I recognize that I didn't know going into this, when I looked at the column, well, what part did I play in this, even if it was small? And I looked at the part as, well, in what way are these people struggling? What are their challenges? I saw ego versus ego right down the page, all the way down. And that was the source of most of the conflicts on that page, was my ego versus somebody else's ego. That was an important piece of knowledge. The other thing that we find out are, what are the hero's ideals? Ideals are symptoms of the grasp we have of life. How well do we understand life? Ideals tell us that. When somebody shares their ideals with you, they are, in a sense, telling you how well they understand life. The point is this, that our conscious views of what life should be do not equal reality, right? That's where we started talking about. What happens is that we perfume all our faults and we blame the outside. And as long as we do that, we're going to be stuck in darkness and fear. As long as we do that, we're going to be fighting battles. And we're going to be doing that in an ongoing way with no solution ever. Okay? So this awareness, this understanding of where am I pointing to the outside and starting to ask ourselves, how is this reflecting the inside? How is this reflecting what's going on with me? Is absolutely crucial. Absolutely crucial. Okay? So some of the things that we did last week, the point of that, of looking at these things, is to prevent this meltdown when we meet these things abruptly, which is what happens if we don't go consciously into the journey, so that we don't have a big meltdown. Okay, then the next step is moving from the goddess to atonement with the Father. Okay. And this is kind of a difficult thing to understand at first, but this is the beginning of real understanding. So I beg patience for a little bit. In atonement with the Father, justice and wrath are blended with mercy and grace. You know, we think of mercy and grace as being qualities of mother, okay? Where in a traditional sense, where justice plays the role of father. And again, how can I explain this better? I have notes here, and I'm not explaining it the way I meant to. When we grow up, okay, archetypically speaking, okay, there's the child and the mother, and the father is kind of an outsider, and that bond with the mother has to loosen up before we let this outsider in, right? And then we grow up in a home, and there are things that happen in our home, and what happens outside of our home, these are the outsiders, the people we have to be careful of. You know, strangers and all that. And then our community is becomes a comfortable place, and people outside of the community are the outsiders, or country, and so forth. So the father is at first the outside, and also a little bit of the disciplinarian, so to speak. But there are important reasons for this. When we're children, all this is fine. But when we grow up, one of the childish things that we tend to hang on to is an inappropriate balance of this justice and wrath blended with mercy and grace. Because I tend to want justice for you and mercy for me, right? You have to understand me, but you should get what you deserve. And when the truth of it is, you know, thank God we don't get what we truly deserve, or we would be one heck of a mess. It's reflexive of our own ego. Okay? And just as we're hesitant to accept true justice and wrath that we're due, we're also hesitant to accept the true mercy and grace that is our natural state. Going back to the goddess. So one of the first things we want to do with gratitude, with the daily spiritual practice, a large part of this is not simply to identify this, but to now go one step forward and to accept this. Okay? That it is okay that we are loved and that we have grace. And it's okay that we have allies, that we not only don't have to, but shouldn't do this alone. Okay? And to accept and to appreciate and to make good use of this help, and to let that be. So at first, it seems like, you know, the female is the helpful protectiveness from the father, but in the end, the mother and the dad reflect each other. The father has a role of preparing us for the outside world. And things we can get away with at home aren't going to fly in the outside world, right? You know, when I was a kid, you know, I'd mouth off to my mom all the time. By the time I was old enough to live on my own, my father made it clear to me that it was time for me to make my own way in the world, that they'd reached their breaking point. You know, this is the role of father. And the reason here isn't so much a punishment the way we can think of, but a very appropriate lesson, hence the term initiation. So let me give an example. There's a wonderful myth of the sun god. At one point, he has had a child who is half a god, and he loves this child. Okay, and says, "I'll give you anything you want." And his son immediately asks to take the chariot of the sun across the sky himself. Okay, so in the Greek myth, the sun is fiery chariot with, right, the sun god and all that. Immediately, dad regrets his promise. Being a god, he can't go back on it. And as you can imagine, this is disaster. The sun is in no ready for this. the horses don't listen to them. The sun goes up and down and, you know, scorches the earth and vanishes. It's a mess. And finally, other gods have to intervene. This is the problem if we're only given mercy and grace, if we're only given what we ask for. It's not that it's denied to us, but sometimes we simply aren't ready yet. It's not that we won't be, but we need to be ready for this, right? Imagine your very first job, whatever it was. Now imagine your very first job as the CEO of a corporation. It would have been a disaster, you know? You're not ready for that. It takes time to prepare for things. This is the role of the father, okay? The father is kind of a gatekeeper in this way. Not to exclude, but to make sure that we are ready before we move on, okay? So there tends to be this sort of a father versus son for mastery name. But it's really this, this preparing. Probably the best myth for this of all is the Norse myth of Thor. Thor is the son of Odin, king of the gods, and Odin is ready to pass on his kingdom to Thor. But Thor, while in many ways is very competent, Thor is arrogant, and Thor is overconfident, and Thor is a hothead. And he ends up being banished without any of his godlike powers. Which at first it seems like a horrible punishment, but he's returned later. The point of this, quote, punishment, unquote, is to purge him of infantile and inappropriate behavior, okay, to divest us of this flawed humanity in us so that we can be representative of the better things inside us. It's not punishment. It's rather an impersonal cosmic force, okay, of how we move from that. So at first, yes, it's scary. It's horrible, okay? It's like the open soul has to go beyond terror to grasp how tragedy of ruthlessness is validated in the majesty of being. We just aren't ready for something like that, okay? But it's like this. Like the tragic hero, the ordeal is born, and as we get to the other side of it, we have the blissful manifestation of the boon, of the presence, of what we've learned. And I think if you think back, I can think of certainly of many, if you think back, you can think of things where you went through, though you weren't aware of it in these terms, some very difficult trial, but on the other side of it, things were better. Now, it wasn't just over. You were different, okay? You were better. You came out with new knowledge. As Campbell says, somebody who has seen something surpassing anything that's been said by justification. Remember that justification we saw in Frost's poem, right? That's our typical understanding. We're trying to justify our actions. Instead, having seen and experienced something that makes such a justification kind of silly and pointless, we have something that is this much higher. This is the purpose of initiation. Okay? And atonement, which we usually think of as punishment, you need to atone for your sins, right? Is actually at one-ment. This is how we become at one with the Father, at one with this process, how we understand the true love that's present, that this is the reality, okay? And the price then, why not just be happy and joyous? Price then is understanding, okay? We want new things. This is the process that brings us to new understanding. So, that's a lot, okay, and there's a little more that's not quite so heavy that deals more appropriate with emotions, but I wanted to kind of sketch out the process and kind of get a feel for that. Let me stop here and hear questions. So, thoughts, how's that landing? Stunned silence. And the crowd goes mild. I need better jokes. I really do.
Got a lot of information.
Yeah, I'm like that.
I think it's nice that you're relating the archetypes of emotion to things that we can relate with. I mean, even though you're talking logical, it's still very, very real, probably with, you know, we're all dealing with those different archetypes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And it's, and as you say, it's very, very real, whatever we're going through. I can remember, a few years ago. It wasn't anything more serious, logically, than a conversation, you know, with someone we were at near the end of the relationship with. But at the time, I remember thinking of it as walking through a wall of fire. And I was not happy about walking through a wall of fire, I can tell you that. It's a very, very scary thing. So, yeah, I get how real these things are to us, whether they make logical sense or not. That's not really the point. And the reality of life is that people do things for emotional reasons more than logical reasons. It's great when they work together, but we tend to do things for emotional reasons. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, I had a question. Is Joseph Campbell one of the better resources for, you know, understanding a little bit more, reading more on the Greek mythology?
For understanding the hero's journey, yes, Hero with a Thousand Faces, and certainly his power of myth. And there's recently a movie, actually, on the hero's journey, Finding Joe. And there are several clips available, and there's also some clips available from Joseph Campbell's The Power of Myth. And I will dig those out and post them on the resources page, on the materials page, if you'd like to take a look at those. As far as Greek mythology, if you're specifically interested in Greek mythology, the two go-tos there are Edith Hamilton mythology, and for mythology generically, Bullfinch mythology.
Sorry, what's that again?
Bullfinch.
Okay.
Okay, those are the two standards.
Thank you.
I've really started to realize how this idea of arrogance, I mean, you mentioned it just in one specific myth, but, and arrogance is another one of those words, right, where we have all these sort of extra connotations, but I know personally that I'm starting to really see how I, you know, my thought of who I am as a compassionate person, as, you know, whatever labels that I have, that at times that, you know, that arrogance is really what separates me from really seeing or really connecting with another person or really seeing the opportunity to have resolution. You know, it's one of the cliche quips. It's not cliche because it's very true, is the do you want to be right or do you want to be happy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been huge for me. And you really sort of nailed it when you talked about this idea of, you're like in, for example, conflict with my partner, where it's like, don't you see my side? Whereas, well, you know, am I giving just as much effort to seeing this other person's side and really being able to see that person without all of the extra lenses that are really arrogance, or you called it ego. And it's funny because when I think of it that way, then it's not scary. It's exciting to move through it. When you were describing this beginning thing, and I know there's certain things that I'm like ready to let go of, there's still that, like, feeling of panic.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't so much help in the moment, but a good way to look at that dichotomy is from Course in Miracles. There are only two emotions, love and fear. And so there are only two motivations. We are either acting out of love or we're acting out of fear. And it's useful to stop and say, which am I doing now? And if I'm acting out of fear, what would have me work out of love? And if I don't think I'm afraid, but I'm not acting out of love, I can stop and go, what is it I'm afraid of? What is it I'm not? And what I'm afraid of is I'm not facing something, or I would know what I'm afraid of. But yeah, you're right. It's very, very common. I was listening to a friend just last night talk about things going on in his life that are threatening his marriage. And he's a rational person, and he's just explaining it. He's not flinging blame around. But at the same time, as an outsider, I can see what it's hard to see as an insider, which is that as he's telling me all the story, and it all makes sense, and I'm keeping this to myself, but I'm thinking, this can't be the whole story. You know, and probably right now she's telling somebody her version of the story that sounds very different. And probably one of her friends is nodding and saying, yeah, yeah, and thinking that can't be the whole story. So this brings us to the this week's homework. And here's what I'd like you to do. Take a look at last week's assignment, where we wrote down the things that are bugging us and so forth. And just as I described earlier, are you noticing any patterns? These may be different situations, but as far as your involvement or the kinds of things that there's involved, where are there patterns? Where do the same kind of things come up repeatedly? Okay? And then after you find these patterns, ask yourself, in your tragedy, what are your tragic flaws? The things to which you're otherwise blind, but if we really look at the reality, we can see, wait a second, you know, I see something in me that I'm not usually aware of that's getting in my way. So that's the first part. Notice your patterns, okay? And ask yourself, what are your tragic flaws? Now, if you can't see them, this is why last week I suggested that you share this with somebody that you feel comfortable with. Once you share this and explain it to somebody else, you will notice more, and if you don't, they will. And so other people can really help us with this. And that's the next part of the homework, okay? We don't fight your demons alone. Okay, who are your allies? And really give this some careful thought. Not simply your inner qualities. You know, well, I have these strengths, and that's fine. Strengths are good. But that's not what I'm talking for here. What are your, so go ahead and put those down. But those inner qualities, those inner strengths in ourselves, just help us to deal with things. They don't change anything. Okay? We need somebody outside of us, outer allies, to help us change. This is one of the key benefits of a relationship, any kind of a relationship with anyone, is that we get that, and you have an extra set of eyes. Okay, that other person will see things that you cannot see or don't want to see, or both. So where do you have patterns? What are your tragic flaws? Who are your allies? If we fight these alone, we're going to get the same results. We've been fighting them alone a long time. Okay. So who are your allies? We don't understand if we just look from the inside. We need outer things. If you don't have allies, recruit them. You know, from bringing in your friends with what you're trying to do to talking it out with friends. You know, the Facebook group. You know, in the case of you know, severe problems sometimes that people have, calling in appropriate professionals, you know, bringing in appropriate coaches. You know, right now, I've recently hired, and I talk to regularly, business coaches, because they can see things that I can't see and have ideas that I just don't think of. I need help with these things. So these are things you can recruit. You can refute fellow travelers, right? I mean, the Facebook group, that's largely what it is. I have allies on this journey. But ideally, fellow travelers should be people who have been there before, okay? In this case, that would be me. But so it's kind of like the difference between, so for example, if a college student has a problem, 9 times out of 10, the college student will ask another college student who doesn't know any better the answer to the question, right? Versus, say, something like, well, from my personal experience, you know, why does AA work so well? It's because you go talk to other people who understand what it's like to be an alcoholic and who have the experience of getting sober. And so instead of saying, you guys just don't understand, you know, there's a bunch of people who will say, and we've heard enough of your bullshit. We understand just fine. Listen up, you know. And those are real allies that nobody else in our lives can get away with. So fellow travelers, if they are indeed, you know, travelers who have been something. Ask for help includes spiritual help. Okay, literal spiritual help if you're comfortable with that at this point. But if you're not, that daily spiritual practice. What is the truth part from you? Coming back to that truth is a part of getting help. That's part of your resources. It's part of an ally. Even if it's not in any way traditionally spiritual. Because that focusing on that part of truth as you yourself have defined it keeps you from being delusional. Right? It keeps us from believing our own stories, which we tend to do. So we look for patterns, find the tragic flaws, who are your allies, inner but especially outer allies. Recruit them if you don't have them. Okay? Really give some thought to this. Include your, you know, your daily spiritual practice as part of your health. And then when you do look at all this, you know, atonement does have its original meaning as well as at-one-ment. And if you want to be at one, you do have to atone. So to the extent, you know, the odds are once you really start looking at this carefully, you realize where there are places where you messed up and you wronged somebody and you really, in a sense, owe them some amends. And here's where we want to get our ego out of the way and accept the humility to go and make that right to the extent that we need to do that. It's not a question of, well, whether the other person deserves it. This is for you, okay? To the extent that we hang on to that is the extent that we will be held away from other resolving that. Now, this isn't something to do this week. This is something to put on the agenda. Go slow. Don't run off and do that by yourself. Do it with help. Do it during its own spiritual time, okay? And that spiritual time will come by itself. You know, I'm not going to go find some college girlfriend that I inadvertently wronged at this point in life. However, if, you know, I run into her in Dunkin' Donuts and maybe it's time for a conversation, you know, those sorts of things. So just really be open to that. Find those patterns. What are your tragic flaws? Who are your allies? Include your daily spiritual practice. Bring gratitude and the goddess with you, right? Accept mercy and grace. You're deserving of that. Well, none of us are, but you're as deserving as anyone. And moving from that arrogance to a practice of humility, making amends where we owe them. You know, not expecting anything back, just simply for our own good. Moving past those inner demons into at-one-ment. Okay? That's the meat of the homework. I'll have one small thing to add later, but that's the meat of the homework. Does anybody have questions about that? And we'll get into some lighter things. Okay. As I told somebody in the Facebook page today, this is a content-rich week. All right, we all good?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I'll go back to mute and I get into the next part, which is Okay, it's all queued up, and now it's not queued up again. All right. All right, I just realized why. Problem solved. Okay. I want to talk about the role of desire. In two parts. The first is to get rid of some of the myths about desire. And the second part is to talk about the purpose of desire. So again, we are both, we are beings of both reason and passion. Now, Buddha told us that desire is the root of pain. But it is also the road to successful fulfillment of those desires. Okay? It's desire that gives us purpose and will and direction. Otherwise, things would just happen randomly, okay? The only reason that anything gets channeled in any direction is that we have a desire, which leads to the will. The reason desire gets a bad rap in some interpretations of Buddha's teaching is a misunderstanding. You know, the real issue is not desire, but attachment, that let go and get or be dragged thing, right? The idea is that desire leads to suffering, so the way to freedom from suffering and release from karma and rebirth is to free oneself from desire. Unfortunately, that would mean a detachment from actually living any kind of enjoyable, meaningful life. So the point is not to have no desires, but rather to stop attaching judgments of good and bad to what happens. Okay? To turn off the should factory. Because it's these judgments to which we become attached, not the desires per se. Detachment means detachment from outcomes, not from desires, from ego. What's the difference? Outcomes are mileposts. Desires are continuous. Okay? We all have several things in our lives that we once desired, and yet we're not living, you know, have blissful lives. Why? Those are now outcomes. Our desires have expanded onto other wishes. Accumulating past fulfilled desires doesn't seem to fulfill us unless we remember to appreciate what we have in each moment with gratitude. And that's what it means to live in the now. Again, that's why gratitude is so important. We'll still have desires because we're always growing and expanding. But we can be so busy enjoying everything that we have in the moment that we're unconcerned about future outcomes while still enjoying the anticipation of seeing those desires come to fruition. It's that getting comfortable with uncertainty part. Desire is creative. Attachment is not. Okay? When we conceive of this thought of a new thing, a new experience, of all the other thoughts we have, we attach positive emotion to this one and it becomes desire. And the process is continuous because we continue to think of new things and experiences that promise significant positive emotion. So if we can learn to enjoy this process rather than lament the absence of what we've only just conceived, you know, here's what I don't have, we'll live happily in each moment. I recently heard Mark Silver talk about the Sufi spiritual practice of the remembrance, and he compares it to thirst. In thirst, you get, you know, you get some water and you quench your thirst. Because in this case, it's a spiritual thirst that you don't want to actually quench. You want it to be continually replenished, okay? Not here and there. It's like the definition of abundance I shared at the beginning of this program. Not I want this many of that, but I want a continuous flow of things. It's not that I want water, a river in segments. I want water always flowing through here. That's what desire is like and should be like. Okay, a continuous thing, and also not something where, okay, it's got to go here, it's got to go here, it's got to go here. That's ego. Okay, a continuous flowing of creative purpose. And that will start to get us later into intention once we get all ourselves out of the way, which is the process of initiation. Not to face scary things, but to get ourselves out of the way so that the true joy that's due us, that is our natural state, can then flow. Just as people misunderstand desire, they misunderstand karma. Karma is not justice. It's neither reward nor punishment. Karma is fulfillment. And the law of karma is actually the law that every desire comes to fruition. That's the law of karma. Every desire comes to fruition. Everything you want or ever have wanted, you get. That's the law of karma. Maybe not in this lifetime. Okay? But that's how the creative process works in terms of law of attachment. In other words, once something is desired, it must come to fruition. You're that powerful creator, even if it takes many lives. And that desire comes as complete packages. Right? You don't just get what you wanted, you get everything that goes with it, anticipated, wanted, or not. That's why benefits and retribution seem to chase actions taken to realize those desires. And that's why the wheel of karma holds us life to for life, speaking in terms of Buddhism. As long as we continue to desire, we continue to expand. And our experience in incarnation continues. Once we transcend the state of continual desire, we have nothing more to manifest and we learn nothing more from it. We'll talk about this when we get to the awareness plane, how that works. But for now, this is the importance of living in the now. When we learn to appreciate where we are and to just be, we become fulfilled in the moment. With this comes detachment from outcomes and then emotional calm. Desire is fine. Attachment to outcomes creates suffering. Okay? Continually expand and grow, but in emotional balance. When we have the ability to remain in the now, emotionally detached from the outcomes of our desires, and with gratitude for them, we are better on the road to realizing those desires and positive emotions that we have when we think about them. This, again, is the importance of a daily spiritual program to help us get really clear about where we are and what we want and what we desire. This is the purpose of that homework as well. What is it that you really want? Why do you want that? Why do you want that? Why do you want that? This is the purpose of what do you love? What do you really love? What do you really love? Okay? And this is the importance of facing the things that are in our way. This is the initiation. This is facing those fears. When excitement and fear meet, that's transformation. That's when things change. Keep the excitement, banish the fear. And we banish the fear by finding it in ourselves and assimilating it. Okay? And let me do one more pause for questions before I get into the last section. Any questions about desire, karma?
I didn't catch what you said when you said excitement and fear together are... What was the word?
That's transformation.
Okay.
That's transformation, yeah. To put it another way, I love something Ryan Eliason said to me once, if your dreams, if your vision doesn't scare you a little, it's probably not big enough. No, it's not really something that's worthy of your talent. Because we're not growing from it. And when we're facing fear, this is another way to think of it. You're growing. You're overcoming another one of those pieces. All easy things to say when you're not the one in the fear, but nonetheless.
And because it all takes so much time, so it's not like the steady direction.
Yeah.
So it's like coming, being able to come back to it again and again and hold on to it and hold on to the excitement and keep growing.
Yes, and I can tell you from experience here that once you learn to do this, we'll talk a lot more about this in week 8, but once you learn to do this, the process gets easier. You start going into it with awareness, and you recognize what's happening. And once you do that, the whole thing becomes less scary. And it's more a matter of, okay, here's what I do next, rather than, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, what's happening to me? Which is how it is at first. At least it was for me. Of course, I made it worse by drowning it in 10 years of alcohol, but that's a whole different story. All right, then if there's no more questions, the last part I think you will appreciate. It's dealing with a couple of common emotional challenges. So let me go back to mute here. The key thing about emotions is that emotions are a reflection of thought. You know, when we're working with physical things this week, emotional things came up, right? And we know that if you're feeling emotional, you can take some nice deep breaths and you can calm yourself down. Or, you know, move a muscle, change a thought. If you're having a bad day, get some exercise, it will calm you down. Or and vice versa, if you're having emotional upsets, there are physical symptoms. You get tense, your blood pressure goes up, you get ulcers. There's this connection between them. In the same way, emotions are reflections of thought. Emotions are mirrors of what we're thinking and attracting in each moment. You want to know how the law of attraction works? Look at your emotions. What is happening to you is in your emotions. Now, that doesn't mean that we are our emotions, and that's the problem that people get stuck in. We identify with our emotions as if we are our emotions. That's not true. Our emotions are feedback. In the same way that if I put my hand on the stove and the stove is on, you know, the physical pain in my hand will tell my body that this is not a good situation. If I put my hand in cold water, I get the feedback that this is a better choice for now. Our emotions do the same thing about our thoughts. If we have negative emotions, it's feedback loop about the quality of our thoughts. If we have happy emotions, it is feedback about the quality of our thoughts. Okay? What you're thinking is what you're attracting. Your emotions are the pain and pleasure mechanism that tells you, is this a good thought or a not so good thought? Okay? If you can start to read your emotions like this, you can learn a lot about yourself and the life that you're creating for yourself very, very, very quickly. I understand it's hard to take an objective view of a difficult emotional time while you're living through it. Still, to the degree that we can recognize that challenging emotions are reflections of poor quality thoughts, we begin to have the tools to address these tough emotions with better thoughts, creating better quality emotions. When we feed our bodies poor quality food, we don't feel as well. When we feed our psyches poor quality thoughts, we aren't going to experience good thoughts, good feelings. Okay? So we understand from meditation that we can find peace amid our thoughts. You know, we sit quietly, let the mind come to rest. We slowly calm the mental turmoil. But we have trouble sometimes doing this emotionally. Try this. Do a heart meditation. Forget about your mind. Just sit quietly with your heart energy and let it grow calm. Okay? Don't think about it or listen for messages. That's thinking again. Just let it be still and just be. It's a very powerful refocusing. Your whole body energy will shift very noticeably. You'll find distance from what it seems sticky emotional trials. Let your heart come to rest. Feed yourself better thoughts. At first, negative emotions will continue to taint the results, but keep at it. Gardens don't grow abruptly, right? Keep pursuing better feeling thoughts, and gradually you'll find yourself in a better emotional state. When you're in a tough state, two things to do. One is gratitude. Find a better feeling thought, you know, even if it's a little one. Even if it's, that's a nice shade of blue over there. You will be amazed how quickly things shift if you can start to do this. One trick that I have used when I'm very upset is the rule of three. And again, this comes from experience. I will not feel this badly in 3 hours. Usually it's two. The situation will not be as it is in 3 days. The situation will be very different from what it is in 3 weeks. In 3 months, you won't even recognize this thing. Okay? And if you look back at your history, you can recognize in retrospect how true this is. And then start to remember that when you're just upset and you're identifying with your emotions and just everything seems to be going to crap. Remember, this is a passing storm. Let it go. Okay? Remember that emotions are part of our mirror. This physical world is mirror. And if your reality is other than what you choose, then you can be sure that you're living a life of reaction rather than a life of creation. Okay? If your reality is other than what you choose, then you can be sure you're living a life of reaction, not one of creation. So, again, it comes down to being aware of what we're doing. Okay? There'll be, I have a lot of material that I will include in the transcript, much more than I'm saying today. The world mirrors our good feelings, too. Okay? If you want to have a good day, start off with good feelings. You know how easy it is to have a bad feeling and have the whole day go to hell, right? You can do exactly the same thing with good feelings. Instead of noticing a negative one, notice a positive one. Okay? And life will change quickly. Okay, I want to send a couple, again, I have a lot more stuff than I'm going to say that I will post in the transcript, but just quickly, a couple of common emotional issues. One is overwhelmed. So a couple of quick things to throw out there. When we feel overwhelmed, we need to understand that overwhelmed is a feeling. And feelings can be changed, okay, by changing our paradigms or the way that we're looking at things, okay? Overwhelmed, okay? A tsunami hits your village. That's overwhelmed. We usually just feel overwhelmed. You know, all I do is work. I'm so overwhelmed. Something's got to give. You're not alone. It's very common. So the first point is to understand that overwhelmed is not a situation. It's not how things are. It's a feeling. You are feeling overwhelmed. And I honor feelings, okay? I don't want to make anybody wrong for feelings. Feelings are important. But understand it's a feeling, not an objective reality. And feelings can be changed if you want to change them. Okay? Why do I say if? Because very often people like to feel overwhelmed. It makes us feel important, okay? It feeds our egos. So something to be aware of and ask ourselves about. Next come three areas commonly ignored to stop and examine about overwhelmed. Okay? If you're feeling overwhelmed, one, stop trying to do everything by yourself. Ego, pride, embarrassment, a few other emotions commonly stand in the way of this pretty obvious point. I have to remind myself of this constantly. stop trying to do everything by yourself, and you won't be so overwhelmed. Okay? We need to let go of the lone wolf argument. People are social creatures, and interaction with each other is how we are wired. You know, everybody is a loner. Well, that can't work. We're in a society. No. We need to get past that. Number two, stop trying to control everything. Wait, I don't try to control everything. Chances are you probably do. It's one of the typical ways that we overlook. Okay? Turn off the should factory. Let that go. And three, stop taking on too much. If I'm continually overwhelmed, it took me so many years to learn this. I'm so embarrassed. But one day it finally occurred to me, stop taking on so much, and you won't be overwhelmed. Hello. And prioritize. If you're doing too many things, I have so much to do. All right, that's the problem right there. Why do you have so much to do? Start making some choices. And three, there's a huge difference between time management and getting unstuck from what we're managing. Time management is just kind of putting things in a row, right? It's important, you know, putting the big rocks in first, as Stephen Covey would say, and so forth. But it doesn't really change anything. We're just reorganizing the hours in the day. A paradigm shift is going, I need a different model of doing things, okay? My first week of graduate school, I was working full-time, going to school full-time, trying to do it all. And I got all my syllabi, and I was going to sit down and make out this master schedule for myself so that I wouldn't get bogged down with homework in any one week. I could spread it all out. And I very quickly realized there was no way in hell this was going to happen. There was way too much work. I couldn't possibly do it. And so what happens now? Well, what happened is I went to Barnes & Noble. This was in Boston. And to the superstore. And I bought like 8 books on speed reading and books by journalists, people who write fast. And I spent my first week of grad school learning how to read and write much, much, much faster. Why? It wasn't going to work under my current paradigm. Something had to change. Tim Ferriss's The 4-Hour Work Week takes ideas like this much, much farther. So just for example, at one point he was his top salesman, you know, outselling his coworkers in multiples, and he only worked 2 hours a day. While everybody else was knocking themselves out 9 to 5 and making calls, he would go in early, call from 8 to 9, go play golf all day, then come back in and make calls from 9 to 5. Why? He didn't have to go through secretaries from 9 to 5. You know, it was a better way of doing things. Most of us don't really stop and look at the kind of lifestyles we want, what we really love, what we really want to do. You know, what if your big dreams were essential to what you do? What kind of lifestyle would you live? You know, who are the people you want in your life? What fires up your energy? What really gets you going? What are some other ways to, you know, rethink your processes? So there are a bunch of things that will be in the transcript about this that relate to what we started with. Okay? Letting go of resentments. Again, I'll just sketch this out because I've written about it at length here. But resentments are about ego. If you have a resentment, it has nothing to do with the other person. It has to do with us, right? How can you do this to me? That's a resentment. And, you know, lots of people have done negative things that I don't hold resentments about because they didn't do them to me. Resentments are always about ego. Okay? And if we have a resentment, we are hanging on to something by definition. By definition. Yes, I know this person really, really deserves it. You're not doing a thing to that person. Okay? Resentments are like swallowing poison and expecting the other person to die. It's a really bad idea. You are simply hurting yourself. That's it. Cold, hard truth. It doesn't matter what the other person did. You're the one suffering the resentment. Okay? So some thoughts about this. Many, many thoughts about this. I have 5 steps for dealing with resentments here. Anger. Anger is useless except as a red flag. Okay? So a lot of the anger that came up there earlier for folks this week, those are red flags, right? Oh, here they are. Here are the issues, right? So when we hang on to it, that's the problem. I had trouble with this part for a long time, but when we're angry, we're wrong. Yet another paradigm shift, right? Because I don't need to speak truth with anger. If it's truth, if it's true, it doesn't need help. Somebody posted on Facebook something once, said, truth is like a lion. You don't have to defend it. It can take care of itself. Just set it free. The first 30 seconds of anger can be an important emergency response, right? Something dangerous is happening. You know, immediate rush, stop it. But right after that, everything after that is ego. It doesn't show that we are in control. It demonstrates we've lost control, in particular of ourselves, but also of the situation. Anger does not help you regain control. It's only the illusion of temporary compliance. You don't get cooperation. You don't get communication. You only gain what you can get while you're standing there ranting. It's simply not an effective practice. Nor does righteous anger work. When you're angry, you're wrong. It sounds really simplistic, I know, but it's stunning how accurate this simple tool has proven itself to me. Okay? To the degree I can't make a point without anger is to the degree which I don't have a good case. Simple reality there. More humility for me. And then at the end, I posted something here about the importance of honesty, forgiveness, ego, teams, and healing, and how they work together. In every person who comes near you, look for what is good and strong. Honor that. Try to imitate it. And your faults will drop off like dead leaves when their time comes. John Rushkin. It's a wonderful quote. And it's a wonderful approach to dealing with those things we adjust, with those tragic flaws we have. Okay? Look for what's good and strong in other people. Remember that the world's a mirror. We're seeing people's faults. We're looking at ourselves. We're seeing good qualities, we are seeing ourselves. So I posted a lot of thoughts here. And finally, releasing emotional pain. I've written a bunch here, but the short version, we are vibration. To let go of any emotional pain or difficulty, literally just release it. Picture yourself just sitting there and the emotion just dissipating out into space. It sounds simplistic. Next time, if you have the presence of mind, try it. Try it. Let it go. It will go. Okay? And I have a much longer explanation about that, as well as some thoughts about releasing attachment to ego in this section. So, content rich for sure. And once again, I have gone 10 minutes longer than I anticipated, but that's fine. Does anybody have any thoughts? Reactions, questions, comments, rebellions.
All I can say is, Tim, there's a lot of wonderful content here. You're doing a fantastic job.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Very, very much. So the very, very last part of the homework is easy, and that's catch yourself and change. When you see yourself doing something that is not a great thought, just catch yourself and change it. And it will start to build a bridge to the thought plane, which we'll talk about next week. So before we get into the closing with the group healing, I'd love to hear from everybody. If you would share, please, what are your takeaways from today? What's the biggest thing that sticks out with you from tonight? If you could share quickly. Then we'll get into the group healing. So, speak. Just jump right in.
This is Carol. I really like the part that says, stop trying to do everything by yourself, because I am very guilty of that.
I will tell you a funny story about that. When I bashed my knee up above the tree line, by myself in late October on dusk in the Adirondacks, I tried to hike myself a good quarter mile before I finally called the ranger. And that's what I told myself. It's like, Tim, You need help. So, yeah, I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
Other takeaway.
This is Sandy and Carol. Yeah, I'm right there with you. I usually try to do things by myself, but using other people, our allies, you know, I have a wonderful friend who keeps me grounded and keeps me honest. And, you know, I definitely will be, you know, showing her this week's assignments.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, independence is a wonderful quality, but often we tell ourselves we're being independent when we're really being arrogant.
Yeah. Yeah, only lying to ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other takeaways? Jump right in.
Hi, this is Monica.
Hi, Monica.
Hi. I think at some point when you said that most of the, I don't know if it was reactions or what you choose to do, either come from love or fear. I can't believe that, but hearing you just say it that way, I mean, it seems sounds so simple, and then made me think of a whole bunch of instances in which I was trying to make decisions or I was not sure about why I was reacting a certain way, and it just made it very clear. So I really like that point.
Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate you sharing that. Any other takeaways?
Yeah, it's Colleen here.
Colleen?
And I really appreciate the reminder, yeah, about the love and fear, you know, sort of not being able to coexist. And and I guess I'm just sort of reminded that it's it just takes courage to face the fear, it does take courage to face the fear, and that the rewards are really powerful.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Okay, room for a couple more shares here. Any more shares? Going once? Mm-hmm. One and a quarter? Mm-hmm. 1.28? Okay. All right, then I think we've gone long enough then. Thank you, everybody. But let me also throw it out here just quickly before I do the group healing. Turn off the recording here and just share this with you, and we'll get right into that. So just a minute, and go ahead.